Last year, I attended a memorial service for Andy Wilde's father. Andy's a member of the congregation, but I had not ever met the senior Mr. Wilde. However, at the service, as his friends and family talked to him about him, a very clear picture began to emerge. This man was a man who liked to involve his sons in projects around the house. He liked to go hunting, and most of all, he liked to go fishing. Fishing on the river, fishing on the lake, ocean fishing, any kind of fishing was good fishing. And if there was a catch, it was always shared with others. Either in a gathering of family in which the chief fisherman became the chief cook, or else a sort of invite anybody who's passing by, invite the homeless, invite whoever will come fish fry at the church. One of Andy's brothers got up and reminisced about his childhood and his teenage years. "We'd have to get up so early in the dark," he remembered. "It was always cold, really cold. We'd have to drive for hours or walk for hours or sit for hours. I got stiff. I got grumpy. I got bored." But my dad ignored all those discomforts, and he ignored all of my complaints. It wasn't until years later, as an adult, he said, that I finally figured it out. All those fishing, it wasn't really about the fish. It was about my dad wanting to spend time with me. Time away from the phone, away from the television, away from all the distractions. It was about my dad wanting to spend time with me and with my brothers. The gospel reading today is a fish story that isn't really about the fish. It's about God having the power to accomplish far more than we could ever ask or imagine. And it's about God asking us to do something for Him, even though we may feel completely inadequate or unworthy. This is Luke chapter 5, verses 1 through 11. "Once while Jesus was standing beside the lake at Gennesaret, and the crowd was pressing in on Him to hear the word of God, He saw two boats there at the shore of the lake. The fishermen had gotten out of the boats and were washing their nets. Jesus got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little way from the shore. Then He sat down and taught the crowds from the boat. When He had finished speaking, He said to Simon, 'Put out into deep water and let down your nets for a catch.' Simon answered, 'Master, we have worked all night long, but have caught nothing. Yet if you say so, I will let down the nets.' When they had done this, they caught so many fish that their nets were beginning to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled both boats so that they began to sink. But when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, 'Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man.' For he and all who were with him were amazed at the catch of fish that they had taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. Then Jesus said to Simon, 'Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching people.' When they had brought their boats to shore, they left everything and followed him." In this story, the fishing nets go from empty to being so full that the boats are in danger of sinking. Simon, James, and John were not recreational fishermen. Fishing was their livelihood. This was how they provided for their families. It required hours, not just hours out on the water, but hours cleaning and mending the nets, and hours of maintaining and repairing the boats. Empty nets meant no food on the table. It meant that there would be no money earned at the market. Empty nets meant hours of labor gone for nothing. Empty nets were not just a disappointment, they were a crisis. Full nets were wonderful. Full nets meant sales and security, feasting and being able to take care of whatever it was that needed fixing. Full nets meant the possibility of new clothes or new shoes, some treats for the children, some small comforts for the elders. Full nets were every fisherman's dream. But these nets were way beyond full. These nets contained so many fish, it was shocking. And where had all these fish come from? All night long, night being the best time for fishing, experienced men had caught nothing. Now here in the broad daylight, with crowds standing all over the beach, fish seemed to be coming out of nowhere, straining the nets and threatening to sink the boats. Simon Peter knew that this overwhelming catch of fish was not due to his great expertise or his skill or his cleverness. He had already given up for the day and resigned himself to the fact that no matter how hard he tried or no matter how patiently he waited, there just were no fish to be had. He also knew that he had not earned this sudden abundance through any special virtue or quality of character. He was an ordinary guy with flaws and failings who did not see himself as deserving any kind of special attention or divine favors. In fact, when the nets reached their breaking point and the boats began to fill up with water, Simon Peter had a revelation. This is not about the fish. This is about the presence of God right here in front of me. "Get away from me," says Simon. "You've got the wrong guy. I'm not what you think. I'm a sinful man. Just go away. Leave me alone. I'll pretend this never happened." But Jesus is not about to admit to any mistake. He knows exactly who Simon is, and there's something he wants Simon to do. "Don't be afraid," says Jesus. "Come with me. From now on, your work is going to involve gathering people and drawing them in to God's light and God's love." Simon at least had more sense than Jonah. He and his partners brought their boats to shore. They did not need any more persuading. They followed Jesus. A lot of years have passed since that day, but Jesus still shows up just like that. Jesus still shows up saying, "I don't care if you think you're a loser or a loner or you're on the outs with God. I've got something for you to do, so come with me. I've got something for you to do, come with me." That's essentially the message heard by Marty Chamness and others who began to suspect that something should and could be done to help women who had served their time. What good was it to just drop recently released prisoners off on a street corner somewhere with no money and no place to go? How could rehabilitation be achieved without some help and some support? The women of the Wesleyan Service Guild were ordinary, even imperfect people when they somehow began to dream the dream back in 1970 that they could find a way to catch struggling women who otherwise were going to be lost at sea and draw them in to God's light and love. The Wesleyan Service Guild, a predecessor organization to what is now the United Methodist Women, began a little collection among their friends in their churches. They began to collect money with the idea that maybe someday they could open a house that would be a temporary shelter for women ex-offenders. money sort of trickled in for a year, for 2 years. And then an anonymous large donation made it possible to take the first step. A house was rented, a program was designed, and the first women moved in. Over the years, the program has been refined and the location has changed a few times, but the dream has continued to grow. Today, New Entre Casa is an independent nonprofit organization with a board of directors and a group of supporters known as associates still drawn from the ranks of United Methodist Women. At New Entre Casa, women leaving prison can receive counseling, they can receive help completing their educational goals, they get job training and job seeking skills, they are helped to reunite with their children and their families. Even housing is provided for some of the women so that they can live together with their children for the first time in a long time. They receive guidance in developing independent living skills. They have cultural enrichment opportunities. They get to work on building their self-esteem with support from others. Tools for a new life are given to them. After 35 years now, it's clear that the program works. It works to help save lives. And the young people who are here today are testimony of God's love. The women who started New Entre Casa didn't literally have to walk away from their fishing boats the way James and John and Simon Peter did in order to do what Jesus asked of them. But they did have to commit time and money and professional expertise to figure out how to do something that they had never done before. They had to expand their comfortable circle, and risk making friends with women from completely different backgrounds, completely different walks of life, women perhaps who had been hurt or hardened by their life experiences. They had to decide to walk beside these strangers and become their friends in the hope that their mentoring and their support could bring new life and a new start. They had to walk away from what was familiar, simply trusting that wherever Jesus was taking them, it was going to be worthwhile. It was going to be what God meant for them to do. Betty Walter, one of the charter members of Pacific Beach United Methodist Church, was treasurer of New Entre Casa for years and years. Other members of our church have helped to supply the kitchens and the pantries for women moving out of New Entre Casa and into their own apartments. They have knit blankets for babies born to women in the program, attended the annual tea in order to keep up with how the program is changing and evolving. They have volunteered at the house on a weekly basis. Calling their involvement to mind, we realize that we too, ordinary people, with our own quirks and hesitations, we too might be asked and expected to go to work for God. Jesus sees our strengths and our capabilities, not just the weaknesses and the failings that we tend to want to focus on. And Jesus asks us to come and follow him. If we say yes to God's call, we will find not only fullness of life and joy, we will also be remembered for sharing the love of God with others. In the same way that Peter looked up into Jesus' face and said, "Lord, you are holy," so we also realize that when Jesus is present, we are standing on holy ground. Holy God, we, like others before us, bow down before you and acknowledge your greatness and your power. We are overwhelmed that you have chosen us and called us. And we ask that you would give us the courage and grace to be able to respond and to follow. With the image fresh in our minds and our hearts, what it means, what it looks like to bow down before you in gratitude and praise. We lift our voices together in the prayer that Jesus taught us. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.